What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You're listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land and independent music world. Thank you for downloading this podcast. And I know that if you've been listening to this show for quite some time, you hear me say a lot of the same things over and over. But I genuinely do appreciate you listening to the show. I'm very excited to tell you about the guest today, and that is Adam McGrath from Cave-In. Cave-In looms so large in my life. If you want to dive, like, I don't know, 7 years back in the archive, you can hear me punish Stephen Brodsky on a podcast. We actually met at a cafe, and it was probably one of the most nerve-wracking recording experiences because I was like, we're recording in a cafe. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on, and I probably need to go back and like re-edit that episode, but regardless, I'm so excited to have Adam because Cave-In has released a new record called Heavy Pendulum. And if you have not listened to it, please do yourself a favor. It's probably one of my favorite records of the year. I definitely think that they not only returned to form, but they had something to say. And I think that's incredibly important when bands come back, that it's just not the idea of like, oh, let's take a victory lap or whatever. It's like, I've got something to say. I want to express myself. I want to express all the things that we've been experiencing some, you know, 10 odd years away as a band, which is exactly what Cave-In did. But Adam also has played in a bunch of other bands. He's a lifer. He's one of those dudes that's just been playing music for as long as he could pick up the guitar. But I love this conversation, and I'll tell you more about that in a moment, but you can always email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I always accept all of those. It would be funny if like I had some spam filter that only like 10% of the emails came across, but that's not the case. I get them all, and more on that in a moment because I have some interesting feedback to share. But if you wanted to help out the show for absolutely free, zero charge to you whatsoever, just go on Apple Podcasts, leave a review, leave a star review. Those things are immensely helpful. You can do the same thing on Spotify, except there's no reviews. You can just leave a 5-star rating if you so desire, and it costs you absolutely nothing except 30 seconds of your time. Emails, like I mentioned, it's one of those things that it's important for me to, just hear and communicate with people because podcasting in and of itself is kind of an isolating medium, but I have had a lot of amazing experiences around the show. I've also had negative experiences, namely, sometimes when people, you know, decide to email negative thoughts, which is fine. Like sometimes it's coming from a place of love and they are like, hey, actually, you know, this is something that I'm noticing about your show, or this is something I notice about you. So I recently got an email from a person that was saying that they were a new listener, which I appreciate that. It's awesome. But they were talking about certain phrases that I say. And it was pretty apparent to me that this person had listened to, you know, a very large amount of episodes in a short period of time. And maybe those little verbal tics that I have come up a little bit easier when you have mainlined 10 hours of a particular podcast like this one. And he was using the word that sticks out to me. It was a cringe. He was like, I cringe when you say these things. And ultimately, I mean, I wrote back and I was, you know, very diplomatic and kind in regards to just like, hey, appreciate this feedback. These are just things that I say. And I apologize if they make you cringe, but we all have our own verbal tics and crutches and things that we say. And especially when you're listening to, you know, maybe a few episodes in a row, you'll start to notice those things. But I don't know. It was interesting to hear that, because sometimes you are just kind of, you know, going along about your life. And very rarely do we hear criticism unless it's like a, you know, job review at work or something like that. But anyways, the only real reason of me bringing that up was the fact that even if it is a thought that you want to share, that be like, oh, this may bum Ray out, I'm still open to it. So email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I also want to thank everybody for checking out the live episode that I posted last week with Nate from Zabalba and Brian from Knock Loose. It was, I was nervous because anytime you put out a live podcast, there's that feeling of like, oh, so this is, you know, like a filler week or something that is not as maybe interesting or engaging as the quote unquote typical content, which, by the way, is one of the things that the kind emailer said that I say a lot. But, you know, how am I supposed to signify air quotes? Anyways, I digress. But everybody was very kind about the live episode and said that it was a nice change of pace, enjoyable, and there's a few other adjectives peppered in there, but I appreciate that feedback. So anyways, let's talk to Adam, Kaven. Oh man, I was actually trying to count up before I spoke to Adam how many times I had seen Kaven personally, and it's the better part of like 30 plus times. It is an absurd amount. I just love Kaven, and I continue to love them, and you should check out Heavy Pendulum. So here is Adam. Kaven has personally been in my life ever since Beyond Hypothermia. Like, I'm a 41-year-old, you know, aging hardcore kid.
Nice, old school.
Oh, yes, definitely,
yes. A real
fan. Well, I appreciate that. I mean, definitely, honestly, like, I was actually trying to recollect how many times I've seen you guys play. And, I mean, honestly, it's probably over 30, 35 times. Wow. Just because, like, I mean, you know what it's like, especially when you play in bands where you just happen to be in the same city and you're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna, like, you know, watch, like, of course I'll see Kaven when they're playing Vegas or whatever. And it feels very interesting for me to watch you guys literally grow up musically, which sounds weird to say because, you know, that's like, it just feels, yeah, like I said, it feels weird to say that because you're like, oh yeah, I guess I've been aging along with this band and watching them as they, you know, evolve musically. Is that weird for you to kind of reflect on the fact that it's like, oh yes, my literal music history is documented, you know, warts and all, so to speak?
You know, I've been thinking about it a lot lately, honestly, and it's a trip, you know, it's a trip to still be doing Kaven at 43 years old, to look back and see, you know, everything the highs and lows and the things we accomplished and, you know, obviously losing Caleb along the way. I mean, it's been a crazy trip. It's been a crazy, crazy experience. And I feel so lucky. There's not many people I know my age putting out like new records with their band they were in when they were in high school. You know, this is a crazy experience. You know, it's like, I'm like rubbing my eyes. I'm like, holy shit, I'm still doing Kaven. This is crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Well, and I'm sure too, with the fact that the musical evolution that you guys have gone through and all the different permutations of the band, where you are able to watch people who probably hated you when you became quote unquote softer. And then came full circle where it's like, oh, actually, you know what? Jupiter is pretty sick.
It certainly happened. I mean, there's a lot of people that have come full circle, you know, and, you know, and even with this new record, we have like all these people who have never, who like, oh, I've heard of that band, but I've never actually listened to them. You know, it's still happening. Yeah. And people have come around to, and, you know, some people go back. There's certainly a corner of our audience that are just only antenna fans, you know, that only know that record, and they go back and they're like, what the hell's going on? You know,
yeah, like, why are they yelling at me?
Yeah. But, you know, I've been saying this in interviews and things like that. I mean, we had just relearned that Until Your Heart Stops last winter, and relearning it was a lot of fun, and also relearning it, you can hear Kaven in that record. You can hear what's coming, you know, and, I think anyway, you know, it's in there. You know, I'm sure people were like, well, how come you don't have any more like chugga chugga? But, you know, we just kind of went the other way, really, you know, but you can hear it. It's in there, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing where I think these seeds, you know, I mean, even from the, you know, whatever, Split 7-Inch with Piebald and all that stuff, like, you see seeds of it where it's like,
especially too from the fact that, you know, yes, you guys were young and, you know, by all stretch of the imagination, you know, maybe a little bit more proficient at your instruments than maybe some of your friends, but it wasn't like you guys were, you know, completely throwing the baby out with the bathwater every single time where it was like, all right, now let's be a, you know, prog rock band or whatever. It was like, no, you're just, the evolution was there. You're planting the seed, so to speak.
Yeah, and I feel like we've always been caving. This, you know, if you go back to it, I mean, there's definitely moments where I think we're pushing a little too far out, and we're kind of getting too far away from what makes us good. And I think we're stretching almost too far. Sometimes we didn't stretch enough, but I think now we've kind of know who we are as a band. But we certainly didn't, like, it wasn't, you know, reinventing the band was based upon the way we had to do it at that time. You know, Until Your Heart Stops, we started writing as a 5-piece, and we finished writing it as a 4-piece. And Steve had taken on, you know, being a vocalist, and I think it was quite the undertaking. And I think it was, you know, it was when you're, you know, 19 years old, that's quite an undertaking to be like the front man of like a metal band all of a sudden, and just like try to sing like that every night and perform like an entire, you know, 30-minute set. And Steve will say that he, you know, and we all didn't really know how to take care of ourselves back then. So it was really hard on him, you know, and doing that Until Your Heart stuff was really rough on his voice and rough to like maintain every night, you know, constructively. But,
right.
And once we got Caleb, though, you know, that 4-piece lineup, we kind of, you know, had to figure out what we were best at and what was sustainable for what we could do. And that's kind of why we changed. And I also think we were getting pigeonholed. And I don't think we wanted to be pigeonholed as just a metalcore band. You know, I think we had more to offer. Mm-hmm. But it was also like sustainability, honestly, to try to like keep on going with the lineup that we really felt really solid with. But how can we play and write songs that, you know, we can play every night? We're not blowing ourselves out, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, especially with that idea that when you're crafting this stuff, you don't expect, like, yes, you expect to have, you know, a modicum of an audience, but then once the weight of expectations after you put your art out in the world and being like, oh, so we have to do this every night? Like, you know, I know that is being a little hyperbolic there, but just the idea of replicating it, it's like, yeah, we got to be able to like do this for 45 minutes, you know, for 27 shows in a row.
For sure. Yeah. And you know, that was Until Your Heart Stops was the first time I saw California. You know, there was a crazy innocent time where seeing the United States, you know,
yep,
for the first time. And like, we didn't know what we were doing. You know, we didn't know how to eat, take care of ourselves, eat well, sleep well. You know, we didn't know how to, you know, just
exist. Right.
Yeah. We didn't know how to take care of ourselves, perform great sets every night. So, that looking back, these are why we kind of evolved the way we did, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I definitely saw you guys on that tour you did with Iyer at the barn in Riverside, and it deep cut there. But Jesuit was on that too, right?
I believe they were, and I remember that show. Like, I have a vision of that show, and I that was the first show that I played with the Marshall that I bought on the Sunset Strip the day before. And this is like that was the first time I was on the Sunset Strip, and I had bought a Marshall because we were just ripping through amps that whole tour. So, and we were making, like, you know, this is back in the day of selling CDs. So we had like stacks of cash in our sleeping bags from selling CDs. So we're just buying like fancy amplifiers in Los Angeles. And I remember that's why I remember that show, because I had a Marshall for the first time and I was so pumped.
Oh, dude, that's like the literal rock and roll dream, so to speak. Like, yeah, I get to go to Hollywood and buy this really cool amp.
Oh man, it was a trip. And you know, that's the amp that later burned in the Cave and Fire on the Isis tour. So that amp later burned, but
right.
that's why I remember that show, though. And again, my first time in California. You know, that was the first time I saw the West Coast.
Yeah, no, it's so cool to have those experiences, and especially have certain, you know, memories and shows stick out for. It isn't even necessarily the fact that like, oh, the show's good or bad, but you just have these little moments that stick out where I was like, oh man, I remember we played, you know, like football outside or whatever. Just, yeah, those little things.
Totally.
We'll pull on more of those threads a little bit later, but I want to focus on you as an individual. Were you actually born and raised in the Merrimack Valley? I was like, you know, trying to do some internet sleuthing and couldn't really figure that out.
I was born in Methuen, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yeah. First breath of air, Methuen, Mass.
That's amazing. So especially too, with like, I think so much has been, you know, looked at in regards to the scene that you guys came up in regards to just the wide amount of bands from a sonic perspective that all kind of were doing their own things, but were all pulling from, you know, similar DIY punk and hardcore playbooks. So it's really cool that there was so much stuff happening that you guys were all, you know, bouncing off of each other around.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really lucky. You know, I met my friends via playing music in school, and that's how Jared and I and Steve were connected. We're just being interested in music and being fans of music. And at that time, you know, in the 90s, it was, you know, Smashing Pumpkins, Alice in Chains, Nirvana, the Soundgarden. You know, we love Metallica, things like this is stuff we were really focused upon. And then starting to get interested, I think Nirvana was kind of a gateway to get interested in underground music via like Nirvana mentioning the Melvins and then being turned on to Fugazi being attached to Discord and then like kind of these roadmaps of finding out the underground. And then, you know, kind of for me, finding out about like Revelation Records was like I found out about that band Into Another, which I loved at the time. And hearing Into Another, I know it sounds so funny, Into Another and Fugazi Repeater and Into Another's Ignarus were like some of the first quote-unquote underground records I heard. And when I heard those records, it was like a galaxy that I needed to explore. It was like these are the shows I need to go to, these are the bands I need to see, you know. And even the shows I was going to locally at the time, like the All Ages show, they're very much focused upon you know, grunge, and the bands kind of sound like Nirvana, or the bands sound like Jane's Addiction, or like, you know, Hole, things like that. But there was a place called Red Barn where it was definitely different. The vibe was much more hardcore and punk rock, and you can feel the vibe. And I was very much attracted to that. And that's kind of where I would start to see the Pieball guys around. And the Pieball guys very much were monumental for me, seeing them play and then just being connected to their world of being introduced to all types of cool underground music. You know, hardcore 7 inches, which were really like prevalent at the time, turned on to, you know, Revelation Records, you know, Ebulation Records, the West Coast label, Victory Records, all those bands on those labels at that time. But seeing Pieball back then was very instrumental in making at least me and the, you know, Steve, the Caven guys being like, I want to be a part of this. Like, we have to get a band going so we can play with bands like this. You know, this is a whole different thing.
Right.
They were certainly the roadmap for us, you know?
Yeah, no, it's great. Especially too, when you are watching these bands start to take hold and play in front of, you know, even if it's a few people, it's just like that aspirational thing that kind of moves you forward where it's like, dude, maybe one day we will have a 7-inch, you know?
Yeah. And also, but it was also the way they played too. It was different. You know, like I said, the grunge, the shows I went to the Hibernian pub or like the VFW halls, that everyone was wearing like flannels and the dudes had hair like Kurt Cobain. I'm not dissing this. This is wonderful times of my life. But when I saw Pieball, there was much more, confrontational, coming from a different emotional place, you know. And this is like kind of proto emo back then, but they were like just kind of rolling around knocking mic stands over. It was really quite the performance that I was really, you know, attracted to.
Yeah.
And I knew they were from Andover, and I think also at this time I'd heard Converge on a compilation, which finding out Converge were from Andover across the river from Methuen, that just blew my mind. You know, hearing Converge Divinity is the first song I ever heard from Converge. And it really changed everything. I couldn't believe that this was local. I couldn't believe this was going on a town over from me. It just was like, this was high art for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And especially too, with like the earliest Pieball, I mean, so many people, you know, like When Life Hands You Lemons. And prior to that, it's just like, they were such a spastic band that was really, you know, more indebted to exactly what you're talking about, the Ebullition scene and stuff. And yeah, to be able to like put all of that out there for them, and you watching these guys just, you know, absolutely freaking out and, you know, throwing their guitars on the floor, it was like, oh, I gotta do this.
Exactly. And I you know, Converge at that time were kind of on a hiatus. I remember seeing 7% Solution, which was like a side project of Kurt at the time. And again, like I never seen, you know, these guys were just playing. It was a whole different thing. You know, they were just playing at a different level, doing a whole different trip on music, a whole different presentation, sounds. I was just so attracted to it. And I was just so excited that it was going on locally that I, you know, I could just sink my teeth into it.
Yeah.
And I was trying to try to get Caven rolling, you know, like we need to be a part of this, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Let's sign up, whatever that means. So you as a person, were you, you know, like what was the family structure like, you know, mom and dad in the house, brothers and sisters, what did that look like?
I was raised by my mom. I saw my dad like kind of like had a divorced, you know, family arrangement where I saw my dad like every other weekend up until I was old enough to like be like, I don't want to go to my dad's this weekend. I want to hang out with my friends, you know,
sure.
That sort of arrangement. But I was, you know, pretty much raised by my mom. And she, I think she did the best she could for, like, looking back upon a single mom raising two boys, you know, in the late 80s into the 90s. You know, I think she did really the best she could. Yep. You know, I'm a perfect example of those kids, of like being kind of left to my own devices. And there was times where I'm sure my mom had no idea what was going on with, you know, because this is pre-cell phones and things. So you can do whatever you want back then.
Totally. Yeah. You just like show up for dinner, please.
Yeah. You know, she had very basic rules, but, you know, my mom was very good for me, and I had a very safe and, you know, food on the table every night, very safe place to live. And I have nothing, no qualms about growing up in my mom's house. Aside from, you know, I was the firstborn, so I had to break a lot of ice, you know, as far as that goes.
Right. You had to be the trailblazer of like, oh, so I can't do this. My mom will get really mad at me.
Yeah. Or I had to be like, I'm going to do it anyway, and she'll get over it, you know. But my brother would just like, you know, just, he could do it like nothing, you know.
Of course, could
do whatever he wants.
Totally. The baby of the family definitely, yeah, you know, can kind of get away with stuff where it's like, okay, Adam, like, you're not getting a tattoo at 16, idiot.
Yeah. And you know, when you get older, you really, you know, now I look back upon it. I mean, I couldn't even imagine raising two boys. You know, I couldn't even imagine doing it on my own and, like, you know, having a couple weekends to myself. And I think about these things now, and, you know, your parents had no manual, you know, and I was pretty lucky. I lucked out, you know, and my mom did the best she could and everything, you know. I think my brother and I turned out pretty good.
Rockabilia is one of the best places that you can buy internet merchandise. When I say internet merchandise, it's not like merchandise from the internet, but they are a collector of all things awesome. And regardless of the genre of music that you enjoy, they will have something for you. And please use this promo code, 100 words or less. That is the promo code that gets you 10% off your entire order. And I think you would say that that's a good deal, right? So go to their website, poke around, 500,000 items, independently run business. They have been doing it for 20 plus years, and they love what they do. So trust me in saying that you are supporting bands when you are purchasing merch from there, because it's all officially licensed stuff. So again, use the promo code 100 words or less. Shout out to Rockabilia.
What did your what did your mom do for a living as she was raising you guys?
She was a school teacher, but then she kind of went back to school and became like a guidance counselor in Drake at High. You know, kind of did the same thing her whole life. Same, she worked at the same place my whole life. Went to Drake at High every day until she retired, you know.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah. The literal definition of a career.
Yep, pretty much. And, you know, she's pretty happy. You know, she's, you know, doing, she's very much a boomer, you know, but I love her very much. But she does all the cliche boomer things that they make fun of on television. But I love her very much. You know?
Of course. Yes. Don't we all? Yeah. And so what kind of kid did you find yourself, you know, being? Were you an indoor kid, outdoor kid, into sports, you know, outgoing, introverted? Where would you kind of place yourself?
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit BetterHelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Ray.
On those scales.
You know, I was pretty nerdy looking back upon it, you know, because my dad wasn't around. I think if my dad was around, I would have been into sports more, but because he wasn't, I wasn't really into competitive things at all. Like, you know, I like nerdy things like Star Wars. I was very much into music a lot, you know, from a very young age. But you know, I was into nerdy things like Star Wars, Neverending Story, Space Camp, Goonies, all those movies. you know, very much to my own devices, kind of like very imaginative kid, like walk around the neighborhood, just imagining things, imagining different like scenarios, worlds, you know, kind of like comic book worlds, very much into comic books. I was very much into pro wrestling when I was a kid, which kind of like came back later on in life, you know, but also into music. I was obsessed with Kiss, you know, which was for many years. And then like later on got into like, you know, the grunge music that was going on at that time. Cause we were all the perfect age for that, like I said, but, wasn't really into sports, like got into skiing, was in the ski club just because I like to ski in the winter, and being from New England, you know, so trying to make your winters good. So I was in the ski club in the winter, which I still ski when I can to this day. But always like a big fan of music, which I wanted to get, you know, my mom got me guitar lessons and I took guitar lessons at the Methuen Mall, which no longer exists anymore. It's now called The Loop, but the Methuen Mall, the actual building has been destroyed. But I took, you know, guitar lessons in, I think I started sixth grade because I was very interested in music. Like I said, the first song I learned was More Than Words by Extreme, you know.
No, dude, so good.
you know, just kind of took it from there and tried to find my, you know, like I said, everything was based upon music. My friendships through school started to be based upon the music I listened to and talking to my friends about music and turning each other on to things. You know, when I met JR, you know, we would get into music. I think JR and I's first conversation when I met JR in sixth grade was talk about Rush's Tom Sawyer. You know, I was always nerdy about music and always interested in music.
Yeah. Well, and that's the beauty of music, especially where you are developing an identity and that crucial, you know, whatever, fifth grade to whatever, you know, senior year of high school, you trying to figure out who you are as a person and then how you can view it through the lens of whatever it is you're passionate about, you know, usually music or sports or whatever. And so it's cool that you're able to latch onto that and to have other things that you can show people to be like, hey, this is my identity. You know, like, I really like this. You should like it too.
Yeah, totally. And I really enjoyed being with like the, you know, the headbanger crew in eighth grade that turned into like the weird alternative rock crew in high school, that turned into like the hardcore punk rock crew later on in high school and then graduated into college. You know?
Totally. Yeah.
That was pretty much the graduation of it. We were like metalheads into alternative kids into like hardcore emo, proto emo kids into college.
Absolutely. No, that's a perfect trajectory.
Yeah.
And so was school of interest to you? Like, what was kind of the, you know, proverbial life path, as it were, in regards to, you know, did your mom want you to be in education? Like, was there any expectations placed around that?
Education was big with my mom and her family for sure. And she definitely was hell bent on me going to college, which I went, you know, and she had the dream of really like help, you know, my family to like help me get through college, which they did. And I, you know, I'm very thankful for that. You know, I think, however, though, looking back upon it, you know, me and my mom talk about this to this day because she's like, you know, I wish you would have made this decision or this decision. I wish you would have gone to this college. But it's every decision I made because I joined Cave-In when I was 15 or 16. Every decision I made in life after that was based upon being in that band, for better or for worse. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So going to college, I went to college in Boston because I knew I could keep Cave-In together. You know what I mean? I didn't go, I, you know, looking back, I probably would have loved going to UMass Amherst. It's beautiful out there. I love Western Mass. Probably would have loved it, but I stayed around because I wanted to do Cave-In. And in hindsight, to me, sitting here right now on the today, it was all worth it, you know, but every decision I made, I think because I joined Cave-In early on, it was all based upon sticking around for that band, you know?
Yeah, no, I love that idea because there is that, especially too, where there's no kind of future planning in regards to the band besides the fact that like, oh yes, I, you know, want to tour, I want to release a demo tape and then, you know, maybe put out a record, but you build your life around it because you want to be, you know, present and accessible. Cause like the moment that you, you aren't, you definitely don't get thought of and you're like, well, yeah, well, Adam can't play in the band anymore. He can't drive, you know, 4 hours cause he's going to college in Vermont or whatever. It's like, that's not happening.
Yeah, you know, move on without you, and I just loved it. I mean, I loved it from high school on. I just couldn't see myself giving it up. You know, and like I said, looking back upon this now, you know, it's a little crazy, you know, a little delusional, but I'm happy I did it. You know,
yeah,
I really am. You know, I mean, it's like even now, like I said, doing this still now at 43, I'm like, what a trip! I'm like, I can't believe I'm still doing it, and I'm really happy. I am. I really am. You know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And is Cave-In ostensibly like your first band? Because, you know, like you said, you did join them when you were 16. was that your first, I guess, band that actually, recorded something, or had you played in stuff before that?
I did this band. I think we were called like Switch, maybe. We had a terrible name, but we wrote a bunch of songs, played like a backyard, and played in Lowell, Massachusetts once. I don't think we ever recorded anything, and I had no studio experience. Cavin was the first band where I got real experience. And Steve is, you know, very much, when I got in, you know, his world, he was very much ahead of the game as far as his playing and his ear and his, he already knew how to really, I know it's going to sound funny, but he knew his way around the four track. But back then, you know, no one I knew knew how to use a four track, but he did, you know what I mean? So he was really like, when I joined Cavin, the demo was, it started to lay down the demo and just try to lay things down. I had no experience of recording. So it just was really rough early on. You know, all my experience of becoming who I am and polished and who I am as a player comes from playing in Cavin for sure.
Right.
Everything I've learned, amp, everything, you know?
That's awesome. I know, especially from many people's experiences, where it's like when you look at people's first band experience and then certain things where you're just like, this can't be your first band, is it? And then just it's like, no, like, it technically was my first band and I'm still playing in it. It's just so cool to hear that.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, it's
totally.
Like, even telling people who I haven't seen in a while, like, oh, what are you doing? Like, oh, recording a record, like, with who? I'm like, oh, Cavin, still.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, you know that band I did in high school where we drove around in a van? Yeah. Pretty much still doing that.
Same thing.
Yeah. So, that's really cool.
I mean, this is a unique experience, you know, and I'm just trying to enjoy it. I'm just trying to enjoy it.
Absolutely. And like you mentioned, when you first started to, you know, become aware of more independent minded bands, you know, the Fugazis and all that stuff that you mentioned, and then, you know, getting turned on to Piebald Converge. What do you think attracted to you, like, once you started to go to shows and kind of see that, that energy happening in small spaces? Was it the fact that it seemed, attainable for you? Or was there another thought process of what kind of drew you into those type of shows?
There's a bunch of things. I think Straight Edge drew me to it at that time. You know, I think the veganism, vegetarianism thing, the politics of it was interesting to me. The way that the bands performed, the way that the bands presented themselves, the way the demos looked, the way the records looked. I was just really, I was just drawn to it. You know, I remember going to Newbury Comics in Salem, New Hampshire, and buying 7-inches just based upon what was on the cover, like buying Chokehold Instilled, because on the back the dude had X's on his hands, you know, and that's, you know, and I love that record, you know.
Yeah. Buying
records that had the Revelation logo on the back, you know, like, okay, this is called Burn, I'll buy this. This is called Statue, I'll buy this. You know, Quicksand, all have Rev logos, just checking things out. Same thing with Discord, you know, Blue Tip, Lungfish, Hoover is really important to me back then. I mean, I still love Hoover, but just based upon the label, you know, just finding those things.
You were just doing very deep dives where it was like, okay, aesthetically, I like this. I like the way the record looks. And then, you know, there's a cosign as far as the label is concerned. So basically, you were just doing everything you could to pick up stuff that was related to the things that you had previously liked.
Right. Yeah. And I was checking it all out. I loved all the different scenes and starting to put together the way the scenes kind of were. Like, I had this image of, you know, Fugazi, they play SGs, and, you know, you go to the West Coast, those guys all have like the Morrissey haircuts, but they're playing Les Pauls, you know what I mean?
Right.
Broken scene. And then, like, you would have like just these weird things I would have about the scene. Then you have the Philadelphia scene, like the proto emo Frail scene that later became like Ink and Dagger. Just kind of all these different scenes and these different ways that they looked and the different ways they presented themselves. I was just so interested in it. I also love how that was kind of like the Underground Railroad. It was all kind of connected via mail, or you would find out about it, like I said, the label, because this is pre-internet, you know, or you'd find out about via zines or like the, or ads and zines, like record labels putting ads. I would like kind of go through the list. I'm like, I need to check all this stuff out because it's on this label, you know, if I could find it. And it was also being turned on via the Piebald guys, got me into a ton of stuff too. And I actually saw those guys a couple nights ago, and I said to them, because I've been doing so many Cavin interviews lately, and I've been talking about you guys a lot, and you guys got us into a lot of great music back then. You know, you guys had a lot, you definitely had an edge on us because they were a click older, you know, and they also had the Converge guys around. So they had a lot, they definitely knew a lot about like Lincoln and Universal Order of Armageddon and just all these kind of weird, you know, underbelly bands.
Right. Well, and especially too, I really like how you are articulating the different, you know, not only types of scenes, but then the sonic differences of the bands, and then how you were able to kind of look at someone who, even though, you know, is a year or two older, they feel like infinitely older, especially when you're just like, you're 17 and they're 20 and you're just like, oh my gosh, like, you're so much older than I am.
Totally.
But but like you said, that they can show you these things where it's like, oh yeah, check this thing out that's a little bit, you know, left of center, and this was what Gravity Records is, and then you start to be like, oh okay, this is San Diego, but a different San Diego than, you know, Unbroken or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, you start to just put it all together, and it was really interesting to me. It really was, and there was so much. There was great stuff going on at that time. You know, people have a lot of romanticism for like late 80s hardcore and things like that. But I'm really excited, happy that I experienced what I did in that weird mid 90s going into the 2000s that I did. I thought it was awesome. I saw some great bands, some great shows, and innocent times too. A lot of stuff that's not going to happen anymore, you know, because of, you know, the internet and fire codes basically. But I saw a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. You're like, yeah, there's good reasons that those things exist, but, you know, it was pretty cool to watch, you know, whatever, Botch play in front of, 100 people stuffed in a room of 25 capacity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the wild times, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so as you started to, you know, play and get out as far as, you know, touring and just even doing like weekend dates and stuff like that, you know, did the expectations, I guess, kind of meet the reality where it was like, wow, this is really cool, or like, this is a lot, you know, harder than I expected? What was your kind of mentality, you know, as you guys started to get out there a little bit?
You know, very naive, but also excited and really hungry to get that experience. But it also weeded out, you know, it weeded out some people to get to us to the lineup that we had for years. You know, we definitely weeded some people out because you learn. You know, looking back, you know, not everyone can travel like that. Not everyone can travel on the road and eat like shit and not sleep. And, you know, it's kind of an unstable, crazy life, and it's not for everyone. And, you know, you learn pretty quickly who you can travel with and who you can't, and who can even handle it. And that's not a slight, because it's not really a fun. It is what it is. You know, it's not. If you don't want to, if you hate touring, I understand why. Let's put it that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're like, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. You know what I mean? I'm not slighting you. It is what it is. So you know, it took we were really hungry for it on those first tours or those weekends we would do. I mean, I remember going to, I think the first weekend Caven did, we went to Albany, New York, and I remember thinking it was so far away. I'm like, oh my god, I'm so far away from home right now. I'm in New York State playing a show with Caven, but you know, Albany's not really that far.
Right.
But the goal for us early on was to get to Florida. You know, that's what we watched Pieball do. And that seemed like a monumental goal, to get to Florida and back, which we did at like the summer of our senior year of high school. And again, it weeded out people who, you know, there was a lot of drama on that tour, but you know, it was all kids, you know, I think there was like 9 people in a 15 passenger van all crammed in. It was tight, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
And that's when we first met Caleb. We met Caleb on that trip. So something great came out of that, you know. And that first tour was, it was insanity and a lot of fighting and drama, but that's when we first met Caleb, and, you know, look where we went from there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And, you know, a lot has been said in the press and, you know, you, in regards to, you know, I mean, not only Beyond Hypothermia, but, you know, Until Your Heart Stops, and you guys have spoken exhaustively about that. And I personally think, in regards to, you know, when you guys made this shift sonically from Until Your Heart Stops to Jupiter, you know, that took a lot of people, not necessarily by surprise, but like, oh, like they had to reckon with it a different way. And I personally always reflected on the fact that, you know, when you guys released the Creative Eclipses EP, that was, you know, you were priming the pump. You were kind of being like, hey guys, like, this is kind of the direction that we're headed. Like, it's, you know, yes, there are elements of what we used to do, but we are going to be kind of heading in a little bit of a different direction. Was that the intention of the EP, or am I just like reading too much into it?
You know, looking back now, I think that's what we were doing. You know, I don't know if it was to diminish the shock, but it was definitely kind of like to put out some new material. It was also getting some time in with Brian McTernan, kind of getting that relationship going, which he recorded Jupiter. So kind of like getting, rekindling that, and that, which kind of led into Jupiter. I don't know if it was a it wasn't a clear decision at that time to be like, we need to put this out to get people ready for Jupiter. I don't think it was that at the time. I think it was just very, it was pretty much pretty organic back then. Like, oh, we have these songs, let's put this out for, and then we have our next record.
Yeah.
But, you know, Luminance is, I love that, that song we still play to this day. We've played that song for years. We, you know, we played it not too long ago.
Yeah, no, it's an, I remember seeing you guys on that, that aforementioned tour that you did with Isis at the PCH club. And I did remember you guys breaking that out, and it was like, and I know that a lot of people kind of felt this way where it's like, you heard the song and it was like, oh my gosh, like they're incorporating, you know, way more of their sort of melodic side. And then I remember, you know, getting the EP and just being like, oh my gosh, like I see where they're kind of headed. And so I do like the innocence of how you're talking about it, where I was just like, well, it's an opportunity to record with Brian and we got these songs and segues and whatever. And like, you know, we got this Failure cover, like let's just try this out with Brian and see how this goes.
Yeah, it kind of was that, I believe. You know, the session might have even been that we had to record something else and we used the time to record what later became that EP. You know what I mean? I don't remember exactly the details, but I think we weren't, I think that EP came out of like recording for something else. I think we were there to record something else and that EP came out as well, just because we had those songs at the time. And again, you know, Brian was a really good cheerleader at that time and really good at kind of, you know, cheering us on and being kind of like, you know, this is, that sounds great, let's do this, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, even thinking about that song Luminance, I just thinking we're just talking about it right now, it also has like a Heavy Giant's Chair influence, which they were certainly, or they were certainly we were very much influenced by at that time. There's definitely like that ending part is complete Giant's Chair cop, which I love.
Oh, absolutely. No, and I always really appreciated, I mean, as a personal nerd fan, where it's like I got exposed to certain things, whether it was like, honestly, like never listened to Failure. And like I had Ken Andrews on this particular podcast and I was like, yeah, I only found out about your band through Cave-In. And it was funny to hear him just be like, that's cool. Like, you know, people have said that before. And so it is fun for you guys to be able to do that, because that can, you know, pay it forward, even though, you know, you arguably are just being like, oh yeah, we just want to rip this band off because like we love them so much. Oh, yeah, but it's them. Like, yeah, it's just so cool to be able to, you know, kind of push that ball down the court to be like, oh yes, you should pay attention to our influences because this is also meaningful to us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I think it's awesome that people find out about a Failure from Cave-In, because, you know, Brodsky, when we were kids, man, he was like the biggest, he was the only kid in Methuen who knew about Failure, and he was fanatical about them. Like he was the one lone kid in Methuen who was like, this is the only record that matters. You know what I mean? There's nothing else. You know, the Failure magnified, there's nothing else. And it was cool. You know, to this day, you could hear the influence, but back then he was even influenced by it. It's really cool. You know, it's cool to hear that, I guess, when people hear about Failure from Cave-In, because it's like I said, Steve was, loved that band when we were kids, absolutely loved them, you know, was their champion in Methuen.
Yeah, oh for sure. Yeah, you're like, not only was he the champion in Methuen, but then you know, he started to break that out to the rest of the world. So exactly. It was great. Yeah. Yeah,
I am incredibly excited to introduce a new sponsor to the show, and that is Evil Greed. They are a Berlin, Germany-based merchandise company and mail order. They have worldwide shipping that ships very fast to the United States of America. And the thing that separates them from a lot of other companies, they provide web stores and solutions for bands, and they have a very carefully curated roster. They don't open it up to everybody. Just to name some of the bands that they work with. They work with Blood Incantation, Power Trip, Nails, Sergeant House, Closed Casket Activities, Triple B, Russian Circles, Chelsea Wolf, Emma Ruth Rundle, Deaf Heaven, and so much more. So go to evilgreed.net and use this promo code, because that will get you 10% off of your first order. 100 words. That is the promo code. So again, 100 words, that gets you 10% off your first order. And like I said, they ship this stuff to you very fast from Berlin, Germany. And their roster is really, really cool. And again, carefully curated. They're not just opening the doors up for everybody. But Evil Greed is the place if you are a band looking for a European merch solution that will be able to ship your stuff worldwide. So thank you very much for the support, Evil Greed.
Tell me, this is kind of a pet theory I've had in my own head in regards to Jupiter, where, you know, because that record, a lot of people had a lot of opinions on it initially, where it was like, oh, you know, I hate them, I want them to, you know, be moshy or whatever. But then a lot of people, you know, myself included, like sat with the record, listened to it a lot, really, you know, soaked in everything that you guys were trying to put forth from that record. And I think, and tell me if you agree or disagree, but if you put Jupiter out in, you know, 2022, let's say, and obviously in the same sort of trajectory in your career, would people, do you think, would have quickly judged the record and not spent time with it and then just kind of moved past it? Or do you think that, you know, you guys benefited from the fact that there was, you know, quote unquote, slower discourse around that record?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, we certainly felt the discourse for that record when we put it out.
It's true.
there's no doubt, you know, and also it kind of gave us tough skin, you know, because I feel like, you know, we got a lot of shit really early on pre-internet. Now when it happens on the internet, it's kind of like a joke to me. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, because I actually felt it in reality. You know what I
mean? That's true.
So, you know, no, I mean, we certainly felt people being disappointed, and there was people who were pumped. There's people who were definitely like apprehensive, being like, I don't know, I'm not sure about this. There are people who are trying to convince us that we were completely made a terrible decision, that we need to go back to making metal, and that this is just a fluke, and that we'll get back to doing Until Your Heart Stops sooner than later, and everything will be fine. You know, it was a strange time. For a minute, it seemed like people were upset. However, you know, new doors started open for us, new opportunities. We played with I remember playing shows with Neurosis and being really nervous about playing that Jupiter stuff, you know. And I tell the story about, like, you know, I was nervous showing up to soundcheck at Neurosis. You know, it was very intimidating. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen Neurosis, but they're quite the group, man. They're quite the presence. And
oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're definitely not opening for them, you know, kind of like joking around, being like, hey guys, you know, we're just gonna cut it up here. It's like, no, this is a serious thing. Like, yeah, we take this, you know, very seriously.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, they were like the first grown-ups we ever toured with.
they really were.
Looking back, they were the first like grown people, we've like adults, you know, looking back upon it. But you know, it was like an education. And also doing that Jupiter stuff, I remember playing in the Stream of Commerce and Von Till like just standing in front of me, and I'm like, oh my god, here we go, you know what I mean, here we go. And it was kind of like, should we be digging up the Until Your Heart stuff? And I remember that time we were really hellbent on only doing Jupiter stuff to really force the issue, for better or for worse. But I mean, I remember the Neurosis crowd was really open to it. And you know, Neurosis seemed really like they were into the set, and it was like an affirmation and a really positive moment for the band. And it was also, you know, like I said, Jupiter gave us a lot of opportunities. You know, a lot of new doors were open for the band. We played with like Jester Brazil. We did shows with Rainer Maria, just different types of things. All of a sudden, we weren't just doing, you know, metal festivals. And there's nothing against that, but it was just, we had our new opportunities open up for us. And I think we were stoked about that, you know.
Yeah. Well, I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you guys toured with Unwound, right?
We did do a handful of shows in the West Coast with Unwound.
And again, yeah,
like grown-ups, you know, grown-ups with kids.
Totally.
And I think they, you know, this is, I'm not sure how much they even played after that. I don't know. I thought they might have broken up quickly after that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know. I think you're correct, because I distinctly remember I saw you guys. I mean, you notice a trend here. It's like I've seen you, like I said, a few times, but watching you guys in Unwound at like the Glasshouse side stage or whatever. And I think it was like right after the, you know, as the leaves turn or whatever. And then, yeah, they kind of, you know, just faded into not actively touring anymore.
Right. And those shows were really cool. And I remember they weren't really well attended, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, what's going on? It's now, of course, sure, if I want to play, they blow the roof off the place. But Like, we got to do cool stuff. It's funny, I forgot about that Unwound thing too. You just reminded me of it. Again, an awesome opportunity that we wouldn't have gotten if we're playing Until Your Heart Stops. And it was really cool. It was really fun to be around those bands and play like different types of shows in front of different audiences. I'm sure we got some new fans. And I don't think we ever won. We weren't like, you know, I think that we look back upon, you know, not abandoning the metalcore stuff at that time was probably not the best idea. But again, when you're young, you don't make the best decisions. We were really hell bent on forcing the issue that this is who we are now. And we were doing that for better or for worse, you know?
Right. Looking back. Yeah, not to interrupt your train of thought, but like I totally, you know, I see where you're headed in regards to, because there was definitely that notion, and you guys played into it in a funny way where it was like, you know, you'd start off a, you know, riff from Until Your Heart Stops and be like, I'm just kidding, guys, we're not going to play that. And like, I respected it, because at the end of the day, it's like, this is your guys' band. Like, you know, we're along for the ride. And, you know, if you whatever, bum a few people out along the way, like, you know, that is their decision. Like, that's not, you know, that's not on you guys per se.
Yeah. Like, I think we, you know, like I keep on saying, for better, or for worse, you know, I understand going to see a band and having them fuck with you like that, being kind of like, right. You know what I mean? I get it. I mean, if a band played what, like a beginning of one of my favorite songs and then didn't play it, I'd be like, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Totally.
I get it. I totally get it. You know, and as we've gotten older, we've tried to be better. And, you know, I remember, you know, pretty much being fried from the major label experience is why we started playing a lot of those songs again. And I'm glad we did, you know. It's cool to play well-rounded Cave-In sets, you know. And I don't think, you know, I can't really think of anyone who does exactly what we do. You know, there's people that do things better than us, and, you know, but I don't think there's anyone that does what Cave-In does, you know.
Yep. No, totally. And in regards to touring, I'm sure your relationship with touring has evolved over time. Have you always enjoyed it, or has it kind of ebbed and flowed based off of, I guess, your own personal, you know, headspace, or has it always been pretty consistently enjoyable for you?
I've always loved traveling. I've always loved it. And,
okay.
You know, but I will say that, you know, I look back upon my early 20s, I wish I wasn't like shit faced and drunk every night. I don't drink anymore. But I look back upon just being, you know, wasted all the time. I mean, I had a blast, but, you know, I look back upon it, I'm like, man, I wish I wasn't shit faced all the time, that
right,
you know, drunk the whole 3 months I was in Europe, because I was, you know. And but this is looking back on being young, you know. Those are my only kind of like, man, I wish I changed that, but it is what it is, you know.
Sure. No, I totally get that. And in regards to, you know, the business of the band, like as you guys started to, and I use that maybe in air quotes, because, you know, the moment that you get paid $150 for a show, it's just like, oh my gosh, there's so much money. I can't believe that. You know, what was your own personal relationship with the business side of things? Did you like to keep your head kind of out of it because you just enjoyed, you know, all the other aspects of the band? Or did you like to, you know, take a role within that as well?
You know, I definitely did not for a long time. But I've learned as I've gotten older that it's good to, you know, have your head in that, which, you know, I'm like the accountant now, but we kind of manage the band together and we kind of all have our individual roles. But, you know, when I was younger, especially, you know, the antenna era, it was all left to other people. And I was just being like, you know, a jerk off 22-year-old, you know, I was,
right.
I was not paying attention to the band, and, you know, and I probably should have, but,
sure.
You know, these are the things, you know, you look back, this is why I do it now, you know.
Right. The full circleness of it, where it's like, okay, that, you know, like that served a time and a place and a purpose for me at that time. But now that, you know, I feel like I maybe have some skills behind me to be able to like focus on making some business decisions about this thing.
Yeah. And, it, you know, if we make all, we do everything together. So if we fail, if we make a bad decision, we made it together. And that's I like that, you know, because we're gonna make mistakes. And also, you know, I hate being the band accountant. I hate doing it. However, I know how to be an accountant now.
You know,
I've like
true.
Picked up these skills that, like, you know, it's weird just from doing it for a couple of years now. It's like, well, I know how to be an accountant, even though it's miserable for me. I can do it. It's just, you know, numbers are my favorite thing. That's why I always say it's miserable. But I mean, I've gotten pretty decent at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're like, you know, you want a pivot table on an Excel grid? I got you, dog.
Exactly.
When you look back at the kind of, you know, like you were mentioning previously with the, you know, antenna cycle, and like, I know that was such a, you know, wild and interesting experience for you guys, because like you mentioned, you know, getting thrown into major label world. And I remember, you know, a lot of the lore around the idea of getting the record ready is like, dude, I heard Caven's been like living out in LA for like a year and a half writing the record. I just remember all of the, you know, whatever, not like people talking crap on that idea, but just like, wow, that's crazy that Caven gets to participate in this like major label system. I'm sure there was a lot of unique and weird experiences. You know, what are things that kind of stand out in your head in regards to like, I can't believe our dumb band from Merrimack Valley is like experiencing this, whether it was a weird show that you played or whether it was just something as simple as like, wow, I don't have to like, you know, worry about paying rent because this is part of like our tour support or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that it was, you know, my feelings have really come full circle with that whole experience over time. And, you know, we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into when we did that. And it, like, I just look back and enjoying the whole process. It was fun to be hustled by all sorts of major label characters. You know, they really are depicted. A lot of them are depicted in movies very, very correctly. You know, a lot of these major label people. But it was, you know, it was a trip being wined and dined by some of these characters. And it was a trip to like, oh, go to bring us to a record store, buy whatever you want. You know what I mean? It was stupid. Like walking out with like grocery bags of CDs, you know, this is a CD era. You know, just like these hotshot major label guys, like talking to you like used car salesmen, you know?
Right.
And yeah, you know, like you said, we didn't live out there for a year. I think we were out there for 6 months, but it was a trip, you know, Methuen kids living in Santa Monica for 6 months. We were living right on the street. I told this story in other podcasts, but I'll tell it again. You know, there's a building. We lived in this place called Citrus Suites, which is kind of right on the beach, kind of near like the amusement park there, whatever it is in Santa Monica. But there was this building behind me that I remember I used to walk by it every day. So I'd go out for walks every morning. And you look up at the top right of this building and there's this like punching bag dummy, kind of you would see him like in like kickboxing studios or something. It's just like, it looks like a human being, but it's like a dummy, you know, just kind of on a stand. And I would see it in this window every day and I would look up because I would think it was a person, but I would notice this dummy. And, you know, it's in my memory now, just my time in Santa Monica. Like, remember that? I would see that dummy in that window at the top right of that big apartment building. And then I kind of put it all together. Years later, that's where they pulled Whitey Bulger out of. That's that apartment.
Right.
And the police photos, you see the picture of that dummy that I looked at every day. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, Caven was living a block away from him while we were making Antenna.
Right. No big deal.
What a trip. And then as far as shows that stick out for me, I saw John Frusciante solo. Which is, you know, what a trip. Saw him play solo out there. One of the first times we saw High and Fire at the Troubadour, which, you know, High and Fire in the, you know, seeing them in the early days, they would just, it was a whole different thing. You know, remember they first kind of broke out in the scene? It was like, oh my God.
Yep. The Art of Self-Defense EP were just being like, oh my God, like you could not be louder.
Yeah, they were amazing. I remember they just tore their roof off Troubadour. And then I remember going to the Forum and seeing System of a Down. What's the band who wear the mask? Slipknot. And then I saw Rammstein, which to this day is one of the greatest concert experiences I've ever. I'm not even a fan of their music. That show, that concert though, was one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life. And I tell people, hey, if you ever have a chance to see Rammstein, it looks like things are going wrong. You know what I mean? It looks like something bad is happening, but it's just a performance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, that's a spectacle in and of itself. That's really cool. When the touring started to die down for Caven, you know, I mean, because you guys obviously had, you know, hit Antenna really hard and you had a lot of, you know, different experiences with that. And then once the band kind of started to, you know, logically evolve in regards to like, we're not going to spend 200 days of the year on tour. I know you always were active in music, you know, from contributing to 27 and doing all of the other musical projects, but not touring as much. Was it difficult for you to kind of, I guess, ramp that down and then sort of, you know, find your identity? I know that sounds very sort of soul searching, but was it difficult to kind of transition out of that?
It was, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time. You know, I started a band called Clouds that did some heavy duty touring kind of around, you know, Caven kind of fizzled out. I would say 2005-ish is kind of the last one when we really start slow down was 2005. In 2006, 2007, 2008, I did Clouds a lot, which we did a bunch of touring, but you know, you kind of learn the lessons of like, okay, well, you're, you know, the members of thing doesn't really get you too far, which that just is what it is. When you have a new band and it says members of Cave In, that's all not going to get that. That might get you one person. You know what I mean? Might get you one, but you
totally, really,
when you have a new band, you're starting from year zero, and that's just the reality of it. So, you know, it was humble going back to doing, you know, doing some different, it was humbling, but also I, like I said, I really enjoyed playing, and I got some new experiences. You know, I was fronting those bands. So I was developing like new skill set of like fronting and singing for a band, which for better or for worse, you know, I can do now, you know. But the learning about who you are and this like self-identity, like you said, for sure. And I didn't realize it while it was happening. It's kind of been a long, because all my eggs were in the Cave In basket since I was a kid. So right. Trying to figure out. And I honestly, I still feel like I'm figuring it out. I really do. You know, I feel like a kid in an adult's body. You know, I mean, it just, you know, the music slows down. So it's like, okay, so should I get like a real job now? I'm not touring anymore. You need to get the job that has the good paycheck, because that's what you're supposed to do as an adult. And then I get these things and I'm not happy. You know what I mean? And then I get these sure. opportunities to play in other bands, or like Jake Bannon gave me an opportunity to play in Worry Wounds. Mm-hmm. And I remember going back to Europe for the first time in like, I don't know, 10, 15 years with Worry Wounds. And it was like, oh my God, I feel alive again. Like, this is what's missing from my life. It's being in a fucking band. You know, this is what I do. And I don't want to be an event manager anymore.
You know? Right.
I just think it's just in my blood, because I've done it since I was a kid, you know, and I'm going to do it till the wheels fall off, for better or for worse, you know, and this is what I know that now, you know, this is what I'm going to do for better or for worse.
Right. It's like, and it's probably the idea that it's like, oh yeah, you know, until the wheels fall off, but just the idea that no matter what you're doing to, you know, sustain yourself from a sort of, you know, paying rent and, you know, being a responsible human being or whatever, all of that is going to be, you know, in service to the fact that you want to play music and be creative, you know, because there's obviously a difference with that, you know, and I'm sure you've seen many peers that are like, oh yeah, you know, like I'll do this job. And then, you know, of course I'll be able to still have time to do this stuff, but then, you know, like fatigue sets in and they're just like, hi, oh, you know, we haven't practiced in months. And then all of a sudden that turns into like 4 years and nothing ever happens. And so, you know, there's those two distinct balances that you need to create.
Yeah. And, you know, like, Cave In spent some really intense formative years together, and you know, we all had to grow up without each other, and that was forming different bands, and that was those you know, JR and Caleb having starting families and having children, and you know, getting married, things like that. Steve moving to New York City for 10 years, you know, it's just like different. I think we all need to take on different things and, you know, go on different adventures without each other, whether right. it be like a profession. You know, Caleb became a carpenter, or just doing different bands. And I think all the different music that we've done outside of Cave In has made Cave In better tenfold, without a doubt. I mean, without a doubt, Cave In is better for it with us doing all the different music we've done with other people, you know?
Right. No, I mean, that's true, because it's like probably the same notion that, you know, when bands, or the old adage that you have your entire life to write your first record and then you have a year to write your second one. And then usually bands, you know, their second or third record, you can see them talking about like, oh man, life's crazy on tour and here's the van. And like, you know, it's giving that real life experience will give you weight to be able to put towards your creative endeavors, because, you know, you've experienced life as opposed to just, you know, sitting in a van and rolling around, which is fine. But it's like, if you don't have anything else to leverage that against, you're not pulling from anything, you know, sort of quote unquote real, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it's like suspended animation. It's definitely.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, it's a strange life. And
yeah.
I mean, now I look at it now, for, you know, back then you just think you're living this touring life. Now when I'm traveling now, I know that there's a beginning and an end, and I just try to live in the moment. And if I try to like soak in the place that I'm in and really like embrace it and enjoy the, like, especially if I get a chance to go to Europe or even Japan now, as an adult, like when I say as an adult, basically not drinking, not in my 20s, you know, I just really soak it all in and really appreciate it now. It's a whole different trip now, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. What's the saying? You know, the youth is wasted on the young. there's some truth to that statement.
Yeah.
Two last things I want to hit on was the, you know, with the release of the new record, and like, I mean, so much obviously has been covered in regards to, you know, why the record exists, and, you know, why you guys obviously, you know, came back together in regards to, you know, Caleb's untimely passing. And to me, this feels like even if you were to remove the sort of, you know, the Caleb scenario, it seems like this record is a real definitive statement in regards to the fact like there is a reason that this exists. And I am sure that that was a very deliberate thing on your guys's part where it's like, okay, this like can't just be another quote unquote record because there's a lot of weight emotionally behind it. And then the fact that, you know, we're coming at this for the first time, you know, releasing new music in 15 plus years or whatever. In short, was that the real intention of you guys as you started to put the music together? Like, hey, this needs to be something, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, special.
I mean, we knew a record without Caleb had to be special, you know, and I don't think any of us wanted to go out. I don't think Final Transmission, I don't think myself, Steve, or Jared were happy being Caven's last statement, you know, as a band. I think it's a good, you know, tribute to our friend, and that Final Transmission is everything we had with him recording with us, that, you know, him playing with us. And we really wanted to put that out together, but I don't think we wanted to end the band that way, you know. And putting the band back together to do all those benefit shows, you know, it seems we put the wheels back on Caven, and I think we all loved it. And I think it was healing for us. And, you know, I think we could fulfill another vision of Caleb's, which that's what we did. I mean, Caleb, before he passed, you know, was very assertive about, we're going to do these demos, but we're going to get back in a studio. He's like, I don't want to do another record like White Silence. You know, I don't want to do a practice based record. I think our band will come off better if we develop these songs and get them in the studio and make them sound the best. And, you know, he's right. He was right. You know, and here we are with Heavy Pendulum. It's not like I remember when we were live tracking this stuff and coming back and listening to it, I said to Kurt, I'm like, Kurt, I haven't heard us sound like this in years, you know, and that's no offense to our practice space demos. But it just, you know, it's a different thing when you're in a studio with a guy who knows what he's doing, you know,
yep. I mean? Totally.
It's a whole different trip. And so I feel like we fulfilled a vision of his. It was fulfilling a vision of his. And I also like doing this band is healing for us. And, you know, we talk about him when we're together and he's still very much with us. And I think it's a way to still be connected to him and still feel our love for him and also still, you know, carry this torch on. And I think we feel very lucky to carry this on, you know.
Yeah.
You know, with him being gone, it's a you know, new reality. It's a new crazy reality with him being gone. And you know, I don't think we take any of this for granted, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, I'm still wake up every day being, I can't believe he's gone. It's still crazy to me. You know, I can't believe I have to live my life without this dude, but so it goes. And, you know, I miss him every day, but I feel so lucky to still be doing this. I feel so
yeah.
lucky, you know?
Oh, for sure. And honestly, I think that without said, you know, sounding like a cliche, it really comes across. And I think the, you know, not only in the way that you guys are presenting yourself from a live perspective, but, you know, the record and just like everything attached to what you guys have been doing seems, and it is so intentional. And I think at the core of it is that, you know, root where it's like, we feel lucky that we are still here. But at the same time, you know, it's horrible that we don't get to do this with one of our best friends. And I think that root of it is what makes people, I think, you know, honestly, the rapturous praise that people have been giving to this record. So I think it, you know, what long and short way of me saying, like, I think it comes across well. So good job, Adam.
I mean, thank you. I mean, I'm very lucky to, you know, meet my friends back in the day, and I'm very lucky that Nate knew and joined Caven, you know, I mean,
totally
continue on, you know, like it's, like I said, I'm just living in this moment right now. I feel like it, you know, who would have thought I'm doing this band in my 40s, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. You shouldn't be. Yeah. And kind of on that notion, just the last thing, why are you still, I guess, connected and care, not in regards to just like Caven, but, you know, keeping up with whether it's, you know, newer music or just staying engaged, because obviously the older you get, there is that intentionality where you really have to, because you're not going to as many shows or not maybe participating in the scene like you did when you were 17 years old, you know, thank God, because that is for the youth. But what still keeps you connected? Is it just that core aspect of the fact that you love music and you'll always continue to care about it? Or is there other kind of thought processes that go along with that?
It's a couple things. I mean, I think I'm still interested, being connected, just being a fan of music. I have some younger friends in my life these days that have been really good for me. I work at a tattoo shop, and my buddy Andy Reach, who's, you know, he's 10 years younger than me, but he gets me into all sorts of cool things. You know, he got me into that Turnstile record. You know, that record is hot right now. And when he played that for me, I was like, I do not want to like this record. And now I love it. You know, he was right.
Totally. Yeah. You're like, right. It's that element of like, oh man, this is like what everybody's talking about. You listen to it and you're like, oh, this is pretty good. I see what you're saying. Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Fiddlehead, you know, same thing. It was like, he played it for me. Like, Andy, this sounds like, you know, kind of 90s music. You know, this is strange to me. Now, you know, now I love it. I think it's great. He turns me on to a bunch of things. So it's good to be around, you know, his excitement and his taste just to see what's going on. And also, like, I don't want to be a jaded old person, because, you know, I was around people like that when I was a kid, and I want to be inspired by things. There, you know, another band Andy got me into was this band Avlov that, I think that some of the amazing songwriting, and, you know, Andy would play that in the shop. I'm like, what is this? They're because they're younger than me. It's a band that's been playing Boston for years, but I just missed every show because I'm old. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
And I didn't know about it. Wasn't on my radar. But So I'm interested. You know, and I still get excited. I still want to understand what young people are into as well, even if I don't initially. You know, I come around.
Yeah, totally. You're like, well, and especially too, where it's like you can recognize if something is not quote unquote made for you. Where it's like, okay, like, you know, this is what a 17 or 18 year old is engaging with, and like, this is not meant for me. Versus listening to something, you know, whether it's like Fiddlehead or Turnstile or whatever, and being like, oh, there's stuff that I like not only recognize, but I see that this can, you know, bridge the gap between, you know, old and young or whatever.
Yeah. I don't want to be a jaded old person, you know, and I'm still interested, but I also still love the classics. You know, I still love Willie Nelson, and I still love Neil Young, and me and my brother are going to go see Roger Waters in July. So
hell yeah, man. Yeah. You got to keep that involved. So yeah. Well, Adam, thank you so much for hanging out. I honestly really appreciate you letting me ping pong around your brain. But thank you for all that you've done, because I've enjoyed it all the time.
I appreciate all the support, and I appreciate being reminded of all those shows. You know, thanks for coming, and thanks for all the support. Thanks for listening. And
of course, man.
Thanks for your time, right? Good to talk to you.
That was Adam, and thank you very much to my friend Stephanie, who does his publicity. She always brings me some great ideas and great guests, and Adam is no exception to the rule. So thank you very much to both of you for your time. Next week, I have Andy Norton from the band Praise, who they will be coming off of a hot set at Sound and Fury here in the Los Angeles area. I shamefully will not be at that festival because I actually have to travel to New York for some work stuff, but that's neither here nor there. I spoke to Andy. I love Praise. Praise is such a good band. And again, talking about albums of the year, their newest record is definitely going to be on my list at the end of the year as well. So I had to pick Andy's brain, and it was funny because we had some podcast crossover, because I heard him appear on my good friend Jeremy Bohm's podcast, first podcast ever. Shout out to that show. He was talking specifically about some work he did on a Sick of It All record that I helped release on a record label. It was just really funny because they not only did they bring myself and one of my friends up by name, but then they were like, oh yeah, Andy said that he didn't get paid for this particular picture that he took for the Sick of It All layout. And I was like, oh man, I feel like I have to have him on the show to just like directly apologize for that. But you know, it was, and I did, and it was funny. So anyways, Andy Norton from Praise is happening next week. And until then, please be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.